Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect to your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for Wednesday, the 11th of June, 2025. I'm joined by Stephen and Luca, and today we're going to be talking about America's Mexican standoff and what they ought to be doing about the Mexicans living in America. A reckoning for Northern Ireland, because, of course, things are going brilliantly over there. Diversity, very clearly their strength. And the total collapse of the Reform Party's credibility. In the past week or so, for some reason, Reform have been like, actually, we're massive libs. And we're completely on board with the disinheritance of the British people from their ancient homeland. Weird, with a right-wing party. So, it's been a very bizarre week, frankly. But it's been an interesting one, instructive one. So, let's begin. So, currently in Los Angeles, and has been for the, and is spreading beyond Los Angeles, actually, there have been quite large anti-immigration protests, which of course have become violent, and have been revealing about the nature of the fracture between the American people and the state, and the people who have immigrated to America, not just in recent years, but in previous eras, and the way that they think of themselves in relation to the rest of the United States. And I think it's really one of those things that the Americans have to get a handle on, and honestly, with quite a lot of legal force. This has to be essentially put to bed as a paradigm, that there is such a thing as a hyphenated American, really, is what it ends up coming down to. Because the American social contract is predicated on believing a series of ideas and deliberately and consciously incorporating yourself into that society. And America is actually very well set up for this, unlike the old world, which is not like that at all. But it's being undermined in the United States, and that is not good. And if that is allowed to continue, well, who knows what the end is. Anyway, before we begin, I finished and have published my amazing documentary, The Death of Man. Now, I don't mean to blow my own horn, but I did an unbelievable amount of work on this, charting the progress of the Enlightenment and what the likely consequences are of rendering the universe as merely something mechanical that is made of clockwork and not ordained by God. Now, I myself am an atheist, so you might say, well, but you don't believe in that. Okay, fine, I'm a product of modernity as much as everyone else. But the point is, there may well be predictable consequences of this, mm-hmm. which lead us down quite a dark path to the end of what we consider a man to be. So anyway, that's on lotuseats.com now. Go sign up, £5 a month, go watch it, and leave a comment and tell me what you think, because there's no definite end to the line of thought I've laid out there. It's something that the world is a work in progress, and I don't think it's good news, frankly, but anyway.
Well, we're seeing it in live real.
We are, yeah.
Much of what you're talking about in that video and the way that you've set out the analysis are amongst the topics that we almost talk about every day on this channel.
Yeah.
And our commentators who come on it.
Yeah. They're all symptoms of the larger.
Exactly, and I think I've done a fairly good job of explaining the problem with the paradigm that we're in. But anyway, let's begin. So yeah, as Andy No pointed out, last night was the fourth night of far-left Mexican insurrection in Los Angeles. And I think that's a completely accurate way of characterizing it. It is absolutely a Mexican insurrection in Los Angeles, and the Mexican nationalists are very happy to tell you that themselves. It's been violent, it's been up in the air. And but I'm not going to go into that. You can find that elsewhere. What I'm interested in is the sort of meta politics of the situation. What's happening around and what's really driving this. So, for example, you had Claudia Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico, who came out in response on the first night and said that she wished to, quote, mobilize against whatever it was that the United States government was going to do to try and prevent, as her complaint begins with, 3.5% tax on remittances. So anyone who doesn't know what a remittance is, this is when Mexicans in America send money home. Mm-hmm. Not very American, is it? Like, do Americans normally just send money out of their own pockets to foreign countries? Usually their governments have to do that for them.
Well, their argument is we're paying for our families, we're giving it to schools, well, all the rest of it.
Well, that's exactly it.
Exactly.
But it's like, right, so you are here as a metic, you're here as a foreign worker, not as an American, right? So you shouldn't really have American citizenship. It's fine, like in ancient Athens, to have a class of metics who are foreigners who come in and work and then do whatever they want with their money because that's what a metic is. But they're not politically enfranchised.
No, it speaks to an entirely extractive view of what America is. It's just something to extract resources from.
Yeah, and as one Republican senator said, we're not the world's piggy bank, actually, and we don't take kindly threats. But this is the issue, because Mexican remittances from America to Mexico is something like $64 billion a year. That is a lot of money leaving the United States to go to what is almost turning into a parasitic southern neighbor. But the thing I found most interesting about this is the way that she characterized it, right? She said, quote, "We don't want taxes on remittances from our fellow countrymen."
Yes, I noticed that. It was very, very strong. It's our fellow countrymen. People have gone over to there. Don't forget, cross the border, claiming their right for asylum to be able to become American citizens. But she demands that they're still Mexicans, still Guatemalans, still whatever they are, and therefore they could be able to send money back. I mean, I always had an issue with the remittances culture because we obviously have a huge amount here. And actually, when you're trying to do the research, even through the UN details, it's incredibly difficult to get accurate numbers from the World Bank. There's assessments, assumptions, but no one seems to really know what the true numbers are. And I think as your Republican commentator in there, or the senator, he was actually also indicating the connection to drug cartels. As well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, she's going to have some deal with the cartels, or else, you know. Like, something like 35 Mexican politicians were shot in the run-up to the latest elections. Mm-hmm. So Mexico is not a
democracy. Well, there are allegations she and the previous president were
no
both
doubt.
Connected. I mean, I don't know the full stories of those.
No, but
those
when you have 35 people shot running for office, like, I think it's safe to say anyone who makes it through that hailstorm has got some sort of deal with them. But the point being, for her, there is an ethnic particularity and connection here. She says, no, they are our fellow countrymen. They are colonists in America, and they are making money in America, and they're sending it home to Mexico. And the Mexican economy, $65 billion, that's not a small amount of money. So they don't want that to be reduced. And so you've got, this is in response to the president of the Mexican Senate, that Eric Schmidt, because of course the president of the Mexican Senate, there doesn't seem to be any opposition I've seen coming out of Mexico to the idea of remittances, but why would there be?
No.
It's entirely in all of their interests. And they're not happy. And when you think about it, 3.5%, that's really not really a very,
no,
very
just
great amount of money.
A quicker calculation about 1.1, 1.2 billion of the 64.
Yeah. It's really not very much.
It's not very much at all. But
you're sending $100 back to Mexico, they get $96.5.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, I would expect fewer than that on just transaction fees.
Yep.
You know, like I'm probably getting screwed like that whenever I make a card payment. So that's not really a very high amount. And yet this has got them all in a tizzy. And so good on Eric Schmidt here being like, yesterday at a press conference, he laughed at the idea. Guess what? The remittance tax just got 5% higher. It should just be 100%, right? Don't allow it. No, don't allow it.
You give them no incentive to do it
exactly,
whatsoever.
Absolutely none. And lots of Mexicans will willingly leave, right? But the thing is, so you've got this conflict going between the US government and the Mexican government over the Mexican government's understanding of their citizens as essentially colonists in the United States sending money back. And then the sort of lefty types decided to chime in and try to make moral arguments as to why the Mexicans should be able to do this. And This is where things, I think, really start to get interesting. You have someone like Katy Perry, right? Now, Katy Perry, not very important, but she does have millions of followers, and she'll say stupid things to millions of people, and so you do have to kind of debunk them. So, Los Angeles, a place that literally began as El Pueblo de Nuestra Senora La Reina de Los Angeles de... All right, whatever. Right, founded by Mexican settlers in 1781. Okay, hang on a second. Mexico didn't exist in 1781. Yeah. It was a province of the Spanish Empire, right? This was once Mexican land, yeah, for about 30 years in the early 1800s, right? The people being targeted today are often descendants of those who lived here for generations or who came seeking safety, work, and dignity. Okay, so what?
Could you not have stayed in space?
Unfortunately... Well, I think
the air's got to her a little bit, yeah. To be honest, isn't it?
Unfortunately, you know? Deporting people to Mars is not yet something Elon Musk has figured out. Get on that, Elon. Stop beefing with Trump and let's deport these people to Mars. Anyway, so, I mean, you can just look this up. The founding of Los Angeles is not in any way a mystery hidden from the light of history or anything like that. It was originally done in 1781 by, and we know exactly who it was. There were 44 settlers, some of them from Mexico, others who were Spanish. Mm-hmm. Go over, set up a small town, and in 1821, I think it was, Mexico got its independence. And by 1835, it was declared a city, and then it was lost to the United States by 1850 because the Mexican-American War was lost by Mexico. Because Mexico isn't really a proper state, frankly, and it wasn't capable of mustering a proper army. And so Mexico owned Los Angeles for a grand total of about 30 years. Mm-hmm. The United States has owned Mexico for owned Los Angeles for 170 years. Mm. And the Mexicans themselves were colonists.
Yes.
Right? Los Angeles is a long way away from Mexico, actually, yes. If you look at it on a map. The Mexicans are not indigenous to Los Angeles. Yeah. This was a Spanish colony that took some Mexicans from the center of America to the West Coast. So I'm not in any way having this, oh, they had it first, they're the indigenous. But no, they're not.
Yeah, but hang on. If we had it first in England,
well,
you know, it doesn't apply to us.
No.
No.
But this is the general theme that you get from all of the activism around it. But it's also the general theme that you get from the Mexicans themselves. They don't consider themselves to be Mexicans. Let's watch this. Americans. Let's watch this.
What is the best country in the world?
The best country in the world? Right now? Mexico.
So you identify as an American?
I'm a Mexican-American. That's what they labeled me as, so I'm Mexican first.
So deportation's not so bad?
It's not so bad. We just go on the vacation. 1 week, we'll be back.
This is not just an America soil. No, this is indigenous soil. This is everybody's soil.
We were here first.
Everybody. Okay,
our ancestors were here first. Why should we have to leave?
Vivimos en este país y queremos estar en este país y más aún, vamos a seguir en este país.
All the Latin countries are amazing.
All the Latin countries are amazing?
Yeah.
So then, but why do they want to be here then? Well, no, deportation means you stay there for good, you don't come back.
I don't think that happens. I'll be right back.
Right, so as you can see from the people protesting, they have a colonialist mindset.
Yes.
We have somehow been allowed to live here. Why should we leave? Well, the answer is you lost a war, and Mexico is not the administrative body that governs California. It's actually the United States government, and if they're going to make you leave, then they're going to make you leave. And if you don't like it, well, arm yourselves up and see how it goes, right? Yep. And this is why Mexico talking tough to the United States. It's like... what do you think you're going to do? You don't have control of large portions of your country. You're not going to do anything to the United States government. And to be honest with you, if I have Trump, I'd just annex a bit of Mexico. I'm not even joking. I would literally just send, you know, 2,000 guys down, choose a border town and say, right, this is American territory now. Mm. Now what? What now? You know, I would literally be just upping the ante and just telling them to screw themselves.
Also, the caliber of a colonist is not exactly the same, is it? You think about where the true wealth of California came from, with the gold rush in the middle of the 1800s, and these prospectors, these incredible industrial men who, whereas South America never really seemed to be able to get itself, it was always volatile, always constantly falling in on itself.
It also, California and the desert leading up to it, as well as the area that's now Texas, was basically unpopulated, right? Mm. When When the Mexican government first invited Anglo settlers to go to Texas, there were 7,000 people occupying that entire territory.
Right.
So that is basically empty.
Well, I'm kind of liking this idea. I mean, obviously Trump has renamed the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of Texas. So
Gulf of America.
So why don't you just take over Mexico and just call it Trumpico? Or something
Maybe, if he wants. Just do anything, because these people are not
clearly don't want to be there.
And then they're not respectful.
Apart from money,
right? They're not respectful. Like, I mean, look at this one.
This is our city, and this was Mexico. You can't kick us out of the land that was ours.
We still...
Yeah, we can, actually. Yeah. Like, this is what men with guns do. This is history. Like, we absolutely can, but notice this. This is ours, not yours. We are not you. We are not Americans. We are Mexicans, and we're unhappy that you colonized us. And you might be like, okay, well, you know, this theme, you say, okay, it's just the activists, it's just protesters, it's just people online. This surely isn't really that much.
Are they really being serious about that?
Yeah, because here's the president of the Mexico Senate saying, yeah, we're going to build a wall and we are going to pay for it, but look at the wall that he wants. He wants a return to the 1830 borders. It's not just ridiculous activists on the floor. It is also the elected politicians in Mexico.
So they do like borders. They're just questioning where the border actually lies.
Yeah, that's right. They just don't like your borders. Because your borders contain wealth. And Mexico's borders contain trouble. And what they would actually like is access to your wealth by exporting their people into your land so they can recolonize it for the future.
And bringing you their trouble.
Yeah, exactly. But look at what he's saying here.
We're all in trouble if Italy and Maloney then decide that they want to reenact their borders.
Thankfully, they're never going to be able to do that. Same reasons that Mexicans can't. But anyway, you see this. We'll do it according to the 1830 map of Mexico. Mexicans were settled in these territories before the US. Mexicans living there are in what has always been their homeland. Okay, so we have ethnic claims to from an irredentist Mexican government that completely coheres with what the activists themselves also believe. They are not Americans, they are Mexicans. So now what are you going to do about that? Trump is not having it, right? Let's watch a little bit of this speech. And Trump is absolutely right in this speech.
The agitators are throwing firebombs, Molotov cocktails, lighting vehicles ablaze. You saw all the cars that were burning, mobbing police officers and ICE officers, who are the toughest people you'll ever meet, and they love our country, and they're getting really they want to stomp on them, but they're too tough. They don't allow it. And attempting to infiltrate and occupy federal buildings wearing armor and face shields. The best money can buy somebody's financing it. We're going to find out through Pam Bondi and Department of Justice who it is. They're already on it. Who's financing all this equipment? Very professional. Under the Trump administration, this anarchy will not stand. We will not allow federal agents to be attacked, and we will not allow an American city to be invaded and conquered by a foreign enemy. And
that's right. That is correct. They call themselves foreign. They have literally, explicitly, and again, it's the activists, it's the people online, it's the government, have literally, explicitly said, these are our countrymen, this is our territory, and as part of the demographic wave that we are happy to send into your country, we are going to take it back. We want our old borders back. Okay, Trump recognizes it as an invasion, and it's correct. This is what is happening. And the average sort of lib who's just like, oh, but what about individual human rights? What about the... No. This is not what's happening. What's happening here is on a much more human level of the way that politics works. It is the collective ego of the different... the two sides of people. And Trump is the kind of politician who can sense the collective ego of America. Many politicians can't do that for some reason these days. But the Mexican president can, the president of the Mexican Senate can, and Donald Trump can. So he's like, no, we're not having this foreign invasion. We are going to liberate Los Angeles. And good for them. So Trump has indeed sent the National Guard to Los Angeles. Newsom has been squealing about this like a stuck pig, but he's not really been able to do anything about it. I mean, the media's being like, oh, I can't get that for some reason. Is it because we're in Europe or something like this? Okay, so what this ABC News article said is that there are 4,800 activated Guard and Marine personnel in LA compared to the 2,500 troops in Iraq and 1,500 in Syria. good. Well, good.
Why would that matter? If you've got an insurrection by people who are claiming that they're Mexicans and that this is Mexico's land, which is exactly the same as somebody going into a different country and coming over here like Germany and saying, you know, Britain is German because the Angles came from us first and we want it back, Mr. Hitler. We're quite happy to put our own military on our own borders and repel them. So the idea that just because they happen to have come over, claimed asylum, doesn't change the fact if they're saying that they're Mexican and it's a Mexican country.
If they're literally acting at the behest of their own governments as well, this is not just a series of individuals who are given, you know, for some reason given asylum or let legally to allow in the country. These are people who collectively understand themselves to be operating on behalf of a foreign state. And they're demanding the Americans cede territory to this foreign state. Mm. And their government accepts, they should be ceding foreign territory to our state. They should be giving us their money.
What was he actually claiming here in this video? Was he saying that, you know, he wants all that land in America all up to those borders?
Yeah, I mean, he's just tough talking. He's not going to enforce it or anything like that. But this is unacceptable and totally disrespectful to the Americans.
And the fact that you've got people as high up as Gavin Newsom siding with them basically has an entire state in rebellion.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, at the moment, California is filing lawsuits against Trump of his unlawful deployment. But really, this is not about, you know, something that can be settled by the law. This is about something that has to be settled by sentiment, right? It is not acceptable to have presumably millions of Mexicans in the United States, particularly in California, who are like, no, this, we're going to flip this territory for Mexico.
Are we seeing any of the kind of influencers like, you know, Charlie Kirk or others that are behind the kind of Trump philosophy being able to promulgate this idea that Trump should be saying that if you are actually Mexican, claiming that you're Mexican, this is Mexican land, you have no right to be here? Are we seeing that at all? Is there any push in that?
I haven't seen anyone say explicitly that, but you can see there's a much more nativist direction in which the American MAGA. I mean, the thing that I've seen from a few of them is we should stop accepting third world immigrants.
Yes, that's what I saw. Yeah. Charlie Kirk, Matt Walsh.
Yeah, Matt Walsh. Yeah, all the sort of like conservative Inc. sort of types, and that is a good start.
But they're not pushing.
But it's far too late for them.
Yeah,
there are millions of Mexicans in Los Angeles and various other places who aren't Americans, don't think they're Americans, and actually viva la Mexico, right? And you've got the sort of like brainless conservative take of, oh, why are they protesting about being deported to a place they love? No, they're imperialists. They want your territory. That's why they're there, to claim the territory. And they will just tell you this when you ask them, right? So anyway, there's going to be a legal action over it. And Gavin Newsom, like I said, he's been squealing like an absolute pig over this. Oh, Donald Trump's acting like a dictator. Come and arrest me. And it's like, look, man, you have a genuine foreign insurrection happening on your hands. Like, you have to do something. And so when asked, do people agree with Trump deploying the National Guard so a bunch of Mexicans and communists don't burn down Los Angeles? Mm-hmm. And it used to be one of America's jewel cities, like, you know, San Francisco and Los Angeles. When I was growing up, these were places that were sort of almost a myth and legend. They were, weren't they?
They were. You'd see the cars coming down, you know, but Dirty Harry pulling out.
Exactly, the movies came from here, you know, the weather was always beautiful, the people were beautiful.
And it's a shock when you go there.
It's atrocious.
I mean, I got there, it's a huge shock.
Absolutely.
The nice parts are actually those away from the cities.
Absolutely.
You know, I had some lovely places where you went and got great wines, the vineyards out there, but they're filled with like real Americans. People are there, not like the city,
not hyphened Americans.
This,
again,
not Mexican Americans, where I'm Mexico first.
No,
it shouldn't be controversial to say this, and yet what we're saying is a controversial statement, right? But anyway, nearly 2/3 of Americans are like, yes, do something about the Mexicans rampaging around Los Angeles. But that was one poll. YouGov did a poll, and apparently 45% of people are like, no, I love Mexicans rampaging around Mexico and trying to flip the state to Mexico. I mean, like, for anyone who doesn't know, this is what happened. This is how Texas ended up joining the United States, right? Basically, the Mexicans were like, okay, we've got a giant empty territory. We'll accept some Anglo immigrants into it. And they accepted something like 200,000 or something like that. And then they were like, yeah, we don't want to be part of Mexico because we're not Mexicans. And therefore, they revolted. They had an independent republic for about 10 years, and then they joined the United States.
I wonder what would happen if Trump said, okay, have California. I'm going to close off the border, by the way. And, you know, it's done. You're a done deal now. Get into Mexico. How quickly would all those companies that are there
go to hell?
Shift from there, because they know that the cartels are coming, the gangsters are going to control them, and all the nice holiday resorts and houses that they might have picked up over years will disappear to when Mr. Pueblo turns around and says, it is my house.
It would be very, very quickly, but I'm very tired of the sort of mindset of retreat.
I'm using it as a sense.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying it's you. But go and annex a couple of Mexican border towns and then expel the occupants or something. I don't know. like teach them a lesson is my opinion. But the point is, even then, 38% approve, 45% disapprove, 17% not sure. We'll take silence as consent, and so most approve. But the point that I find really interesting about this is Newsom has basically taken ownership of all of the Mexicans in California, right? I mean, look at what he says here, right? California will keep fighting on behalf of all our people, including in the courts. Right, so the Mexicans who are like, Viva la Mexico, California is Mexican soil, Gavin Newsom's like, yeah, they're our people. It's like, so what, are you going to join Mexico? Like, what do you think the options are here? Like, this is ridiculous. And then just screaming that Trump's a dictator, even though he obviously isn't a dictator.
Clearly not.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, okay, what's the plan, Gavin? Right? Saying, oh, this is un-American. Sorry, deploying the Marines to stop a Mexican incursion into America actually is pretty traditional for Americans.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Got precedent.
It's got precedent. It's how you ended up with California in the first place. But, you know, saying, oh, these are our people, it's un-American. It's like, but the thing is this not un-American? Is standing on top of a burning police car waving a Mexican flag not un-American to Gavin Newsom? Mm-hmm. This is what he's in defense of. It's like, sorry, do you think this guy thinks of himself as an American? Or do you think he thinks of himself as a colonizer? He is there to take Mexican territory, and Gavin Newsom can sit there and whine, oh, arrest me all you want, but that's the deal. And I guess I'll just finish this one on Douglas Mackey has been looking into the legal situation here. It is possible for anyone who's been participating in an insurrection or rebellion to have their citizenship revoked. So if Trump were to have it done through the courts that actually... This happy chappy here is actually not an American, is actually someone who's engaged in an insurrection here, which, I mean, it kind of looks like it to me. Like, yes, we're rejecting the state authority of the police and waving a Mexican flag as if this is claimed territory. I mean, I don't think it's the weakest argument I've ever heard for what an insurrection could actually be. Well, what you can do is get them denaturalized. And once they're denaturalized, you could deport them. Mm-hmm. So there is actually a legal route by which this could all be done. And the Mexican population of California could just be sent home, which is where really they belong, isn't it? I mean, it is in their hearts anyway. So anyway, absolutely crazy. And I don't think this is going to be the end of it or anything like that. But this is these are the fractures that are being dealt with here, right? That you have a large population of foreign people who understand themselves to be foreign, are not in any way interested in becoming Americans, but are instead very interested in reclaiming your territory where you've allowed them to live for Mexico. And it's like, okay, you're going to have to deal with that, right? You're going to have to deal with that at some point, or you'll end up with the Texas situation on your hands. Lots of comments on this.
Well, I'll be surprised if there isn't.
Yeah. It's always too low and I can't ever see the thing. Logan says, happy to say my LA clients are okay. No one was hurt. On a side note, as a smarter man than me said, make flogging great again. Yeah, I'm toasting. The Engaged View says, if one Mexican soldier is found on U.S. soil, Sheinbaum should get a visit from Hellfire. Well, I mean, I don't think blowing her up is the necessary thing, but just honestly, just annex a couple of crappy border towns. Just teach them a lesson.
Well, the cartels will just replace whoever they feel is
exactly,
good.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Has anyone seen China build a 158-kilometer highway entirely by autonomous robots and drones? No, I haven't, but it's not surprisingly. Sigilstone says, General Motors has announced a $4 billion push to move back the manufacturing out of Mexico and back to the US. Sucks to suck, yep. If I were Trump, I would just annex a bit of Mexico. Carl, we already have Mississippi. We don't need another failed state. Well, yeah, I know, but this is about the principle of this. Like, oh, we're going to take California. No, you're not, and you're going to lose something now. Neo and Rilla said, LA was founded by Spanish missionaries, not indigenous natives, as part of Spain's empire. Well, they did have some Mexicans with them, but Mexicans aren't from California. So When Mexico lost California in 1848, only 7,500 Mexicans lived there. Most were not born in California, obviously. Ryan says, America crossed Mexico all the way to Mexico City in the Polk administration. That's because Mexico, their armies have been always terrible, frankly. Mexico's independence came down entirely to a debate, decided Mexico was trouble and left. Trump needs a Polk portrait. There, that would be funny. If Mexico wants to push the old indigenous land claims, do they also want to push the old way of how that's handled? They want a new Pax Romana to exterminate the very concept of Mexican. I'm sure they don't. And be careful dragging the past into the modern day. You'll get more of it than you want. Joseph says Mexican food is slop. Hey, man, you'd have to persuade me. And Neo says, of the roughly 200 men who fought defending the Alamo, 20 were Mexicans under the command of Juan Sequin and Gregorio Esparza. It's why Mexicans in Texas are a different character, calling them Tejanos. Very interesting. Anyway, I didn't know that, but let's move on.
All right. So, troubles in Northern Ireland, I'm afraid, though perhaps those that Ireland isn't usually historically associated with. It's a different flavour of trouble, unfortunately.
I can't help but notice that the theme of the podcast today is the echoes of history coming back to haunt us.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be. But I suppose that's quite relevant because a lot like... it's really coming down to a question of land disputes, isn't it? And who has a right to which particular territory? And I would like to suggest, admittedly, controversially, that perhaps the Irish have a right to Ireland. Now, I know this might seem a controversial take.
Well, it's radical.
Yeah. It is. And the reason it's become so radical, as you know, like highlight in your new documentary, The Death of Man, is the Enlightenment story of the rationalization of the world and the way that it's equalized and erodes any particularisms that mean that certain places belong to certain people, and to eradicate the categories that basically make genuine human diversity in the world actually worth it. Or even
possible. I mean, the very notion of the Enlightenment is the atomized individual who exists prior to their existence within a group.
Mm.
And so really what liberalism and the Enlightenment as a whole is trying to do is liberate us from all of these unchosen obligations. So we are essentially just pre-social individuals that just exist without forming into groups. And it's like, okay, but that's crazy and not true. Mm. That was never the case. We've never existed.
We're an atom, but we just don't form into anything else.
Exactly. And that's what liberalism...
Maybe we just float around and just bounce off one another, but that's certainly what the liberalist idea is, that individuality of singleness. And I also look, it's easy to control. If you don't have any bonds to society, if you don't have bonds to a country, if you don't have bonds to your family, then the biggest atom... with its way of sledgehammering over you, is able to control you.
Yeah. I mean, Rousseau expressly said that people should be maximally dependent on the state. But the point is, in this documentary, I'm pointing out that there are actually some logical consequences of that are pretty negative, actually. Mm. And we end up in a completely materialistic world in which nothing is special and nothing is sacred, and that's not good.
No, not at all.
You know, for the Enlightenment was the knife we drew across God's throat. Mm. So
if you're interested in seeing how we got there, how the Enlightenment has brought us to this point, go and check out Carl's wonderful documentary.
I'm making quite a strong claim there, I appreciate it. I think I back it up in the documentary. So,
let's assess how we got where we got with the recent riots that we saw across Northern Ireland these past few days.
Sorry, just a quick thing. I've only been following this tangentially. It's been, what, 2 or 3 days of actual rioting?
There were 2 days of rioting. Days of rioting.
Day four as well now. I think we're on day four today, a little bit at the same time as California went off.
The original event...
Not that I'm linking the two together in a suspicious way.
No, although there are... I'll get to it. So one of the interesting things... So this, in answer to your question, Stephen, this all really kicked off on Saturday.
Right.
This kicked off on Saturday because there was news that a local 13-year-old girl there was an attempted rape by two 14-year-old boys, right? Mm. And this is, just for a bit of background, on Ballymena, the town that this happened in. It's the seventh largest town in Northern Ireland. But as we know, Northern Ireland doesn't have a particularly high population. There's just
1.6 million.
2 million, yeah, 1.9. Oh, wow. And And this town in particular only has about 30,000 people living in it. So it's a very small place in the grand scheme of things. And this, and one of the also interesting things is the fact that the town itself is actually 96% ethnically Irish. Okay.
Or is it, okay. Is it Northern Irish? Right.
Northern Irish, yes. Yep. Okay. So it's... So what we had here with this, these two boys were brought in, and you know their case was assessed. And one of the telling things was that they required Romanian interpreters.
Oh, did they?
In order to process, in order to deny the allegations. So that speaks to just what we're dealing with here. So. Some just general information about, because even though Ballymena is 96% Irish...
One particular street is...
It just so happens to be this place of, yes, Clenavon Terrace.
Right. Oh,
and
yeah.
You've got... So 57% were not born in either the island of Ireland or Great Britain. 64% were of a foreign background. And... 60% of Harveyville primary school students don't speak English as a first language.
So it's a very small colony they have living among them. Mm-hmm.
It is. So I go to here, as I say, 94% white overall. And this here, though, is
you
interesting.
Go back. So they're mainly, you talk about the Irish, so these are mainly Catholics. So these would have been the kind of pro unification of Ireland and, let's say, you know, friends with the other Sinn Féin type supporters. Is that how they also vote?
Well, I've...
It looks like it's going to be majority Protestant raised.
Oh, is it? The religion on the right.
Yeah, you've got about 50% sort of Protestant or not, no religion.
Mm. Okay.
So, yeah, it's still majority Northern Irish, Anglo-Irish, I guess we call them. I'm not sure. Okay.
But it's also interesting, isn't it, to, you know, just assess the past few years of Irish history and how, you know, we saw recently, didn't we, the fact that Irish Catholics and Protestants banding together in the face of mass immigration.
Well, that was perhaps we're more alike than we previously thought. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, just driving towards, is that where we're getting to on this.
Mm. Absolutely. And one thing that I also just wanted to bring up as regards to the census was the fact that of those who are foreign born, 52% of them arrived in the past 15 years.
Yeah.
Right. So even though Northern Ireland, generally speaking, has until now been relatively more protected from mass immigration than other parts of the United Kingdom, it's coming.
Yeah.
It's always coming. Yeah. It's always on the horizon. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I just want to pause on that because there are a lot of people who I bet are watching this who are in some nice little village somewhere in Devon or somewhere in the Northeast, maybe Northern Ireland, who are just thinking, well, these are problems that are a long way away from me. You know, we haven't got a diversified thing yet. We've only got, you know, two Indian restaurants and a Turkish barbers. What's the problem? Yeah, this is the signs.
Yes.
This is the beginning of your diversification. It is coming. It is spreading out. They're going to get the entire country. And nowhere is going to be safe.
The fires of Isengard will spread.
Mm. Precisely.
Yes.
Precisely.
So, as regards... So, off the back of this attempted rape that these two boys have been charged with, obviously the locals of the town wanted to obviously come out in defiance against this... what is slowly becoming an enclave, right, against the rest of the community. And you can see here, as David points out, these locals organising on Facebook and trying to hold the... So, pardon me, half seven. And from there, this is where... It starts out and you can tell that tensions are very, very high and ultimately some rash, warm-blooded actors are obviously going to demand personal... vigilante justice for this. Yeah. And obviously the reason for this is because, you know, even though the demographics of this particular town might be relatively homogenous, they're not blind to what goes on in other places. No. They've seen Southport. They've seen Dublin. They know what happens. They know, as you were saying,
they've seen Rotherham.
They know where this leads, right? And so even though I'm obviously not condoning mass violence and all these sorts of things, you can understand why people, when the state takes justice away from them, and you can no longer go to the state for justice, why people will inevitably take matters into their own hands.
The liberals are going to argue, aren't they? Very clearly. Oh, no, we are doing justice. We've took them in. We've given them, we're questioning. You've not gone through the court system yet, just as they did with Southport. Mm. And by the way, this is just a bunch of far rightists who are trying to cause trouble on immigration. Mm. And I've always said, though, be very, very careful about who's actually starting these riots. Mm. It goes back to when I was at the Moss Side riots and I saw them as a boy, that it was actually very posh students dealing with the Molotov cocktails trying to hand it to us to throw. How do we know that this is not state-backed organization or leftist Antifa trying to do this so that they can give a bad name, just as they did in Southport?
Right. Well, exactly.
In my view. You know,
well, no, it's a genuine concern. It's a genuine concern, and we know from the way that the British state deals with these
sorts
of things.
That's exactly what we're getting to.
They will absolutely manipulate events in order to create the outcome that they want, which will justify more crackdown, more power, and more disenfranchisement of the working people.
This is the real question of justice. The individual case, as bad as it obviously is, is not the justice that is being denied. The justice that is being denied is the ability to have a safe and harmonious community in which you don't have to worry about your daughters being raped by foreigners.
Absolutely.
That's the justice that's being denied. That's, you know, people don't articulate it that way, but that's what's really driving this.
And I've just got a video here because it goes through the day quite succinctly. So we'll just watch this for a second.
So one thing I just want to emphasize, you can't talk over it. If the noise is on, you just can't hear it. But so what's going on here?
Well, this is, so you can see here that there's a vigil, there's a mass gathering, and then the police move in. Now, obviously, there's fire.
Yeah, what's on fire there?
Bins, garbage, anything flammable. There were bricks being hurled at police cars. There were Molotovs being thrown. And there was there does seem to have been quite a deal of violence. Over the some 15 people were arrested, and almost just as many policemen were injured over the past few days. So it was.
Now, the consequence, what was the size of the town again?
30,000-ish.
30,000, and now I've already just counted 9 militarised kind of army-style police vans with batons and all the rest of it for a street of 30,000 going down one street. Mm. You know, this, to me, looks like the state overreach on this. Where is the reach out to the community leaders from the state in this particular one? Where's the sit-down, the pal-pal that would come along as if they were, you know, in Pakistani organisations, angry as they did in there? I don't see any of that. What I do see straight away is the heavy-handedness of the police going in on this particular issue when it's the reverse of what we're seeing in California.
I mean, the appropriate response would be to say, yep, we appreciate this is something that a foreign community has done to your community. Mm. And so what we're going to do is we're going to make mandatory everyone in that foreign community, one, learn English, and two, sit down and explain to them how they have to behave.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to make sure that they have to do like a 3-week course or something. You know, everyone in this community has to sit down, learn English, do this 3-week course, and then we'll see. Because that what that shows is that it's the majority community dictating to the minority community how they have to live, to live alongside them. Mm. So the people can feel, oh no, we are the people in control of this. We are going to get this overall underpinning justice of, you know, we will be the ones taken care of by our own country. Right, and instead, like you say, in Britain, it goes the other way. Yeah. It's always the other way. Sorry.
No, not at all. The minorities are treated with kid gloves, and the working classes get the water cannons.
Yeah. What
is the community? Is it just a Roma community? Is it Romanian? So we can't argue this time. It's about Islam.
No,
it's just about the nature of that community coming in. So when they're talking about far right, aren't they going to be arguing it's white to white?
Well, I mean, technically, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just anti-foreign, isn't it?
Ah, it's an extension of the argument.
It's about ethnicity and nationality.
Yeah.
Stephen, xenophobia is xenophobia. And we disavow xenophobia of all colours in all forms.
Yeah.
So, yeah, things got really, really hairy out there. And what's more, from there, as I say, these were arrests over one day, on the, six arrests on the second night in Ballymena. And so then, of course, you have the reaction to all of this from the state itself after the carnage is all done with. So this was, yes, the police in Northern Ireland, and if I could get the mouse, there we go. I'll just play 20 seconds.
Last night saw significant just turn it up, Samson, please. In Ballymena. This violence was clearly racially motivated and targeted at our minority ethnic community and the police. It was racist thuggery, pure and simply, and any attempt to justify or explain it as something else is misplaced.
Right, so we're not going to listen to you. You are the bad people, and the minorities, of whom some of the, again, a very small community, and yet two of them are now accused of being rapists, they're the ones we're going to protect in the face of their predation on you. Unbelievable. Completely the wrong way to calm all this down. No wonder people are pissed off. Again, this is the state setting its face against you.
And the Police Federation for Northern Ireland said that the attack on police officers was totally mindless, unacceptable and feral. Mindless. Totally divorcing this from any sense of context.
Yeah, as if something didn't happen.
Yes.
I mean, this is some bland, boring, dull character sitting in the PR department of the police saying, here is the template that I'm just going to put in for absolutely everything, to be honest. And I wouldn't care which political party individual it was, you know. I'm going to say the same.
Yeah. And also, it comes down to that thing that, okay, well, yes, so there have been these two rapes, and they're attempted rapes, and they're absolutely terrible. And the people of this town should never have had to contemplate that thing happening in the first place. And it wouldn't have happened were it not for some engineering of forcing minority groups.
Government policy.
Yeah, government policy.
This is a product of government policy.
And it also goes totally in line with things like this. Asylum accommodation costs rise to 400 million in Northern Ireland.
You've got to pay for the privilege.
All these things fuse together to create this tension that will eventually boil over. When you throw so, when the state throws so much antagonistic energies, all of their dedicated energies towards making Ireland a horrible place for the Irish.
I mean, diverse.
Yeah, diverse for the Irish. Yeah. Then these things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And the authorities have no way of diffusing the tension because they refuse to admit to a single mistake. They refuse to identify the fact that diversity is a weakness, that it brings crime and distrust. Yeah. Well,
they refuse to discipline the community that is responsible for the attack.
Yes.
And they're instead trying to discipline the Irish, Northern Irish community.
I couldn't agree more with
it. It's unacceptable.
It's victim blaming once more.
It is, yeah. It's victim blaming.
It is. I found this one sensible opinion amongst it all, though, from a Timothy Gaston.
Maybe the Irish people aren't the problem when a bunch of Romanian kids try to rape an Irish girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
It says, some in the house may not want to hear it, but you cannot say that you have not been warned. There is a deep concern in parts of Ballymena about the significant demographic change in recent years, particularly due to the resettlement of Roma families, with they're often having a arrived in large numbers from the Republic of Ireland. And so, yes, like it's a tale that we just see happening in more and more remote places now. And ultimately, as I say, even though Northern Ireland has been relatively protected from this for quite a long time, it is coming. There will be more Ballyminas, and there seems no sign on the horizon, really, that the British state is going to pivot and do address any of the concerns that led to this in the first place.
Yeah, and I think there's also another attack line that the people of Ballymena and people of towns across the country, and here they're fairly relatively contained in a certain area. So what needs to happen is to be able to find out who owns the houses. It's quite easy to find that out on the land registry. And if it's a company that owns the houses, like Serco or whoever the Irish equivalent is, that's dealing with it, find out who owns that house and target them. Target them with peaceful demonstrations. Target them with emails. Find out who the individuals in those companies are. Find out what the shareholders are. And make complaints to each of them. All of them lawfully. I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form. And just make sure, MI5, as you're listening to this, I am not advocating any violence at all. Because I know you want to arrest us in any way you can. So just do so and find a way, another way of campaigning. Because that's exactly how the left would do it.
Yes.
And it's about time we did as well.
I would just draw also a thread between your last segment as well, Carl, and say about when you look at these people from California, right, the Mexicans who are basically in open rebellion, even there you'd think, wow, just screaming rebellion from California, from inside America itself. That sounds like that's a ballsy move, right? No, it's not.
I wouldn't think of doing it.
No, but they do because they actually feel that the state of California protects them.
Well, Newsom took ownership of it. Right, our people. Trump represents, finally, a modern liberal, or not liberal, but a modern state that is actually working in the interests of the majority people for the first time in decades.
Exactly. Whereas in this case, it's the total inversion of that paradigm. This is the people who do actually have a right to the land, bravely standing up to their own government.
Well, I was about to raise that point. Here we have a two-tier approach by the states, both in terms of the way that we defend or oppose the opposition here in California. They're defending those who are taking over the land and saying it's their own or indeed belonging to Mexico. But in Ballymena, they're attacking the people who belong to land, who live there, for those who are coming in to take it over. And so what we've got here is the question is, what is in the sense, what's in the brains of these individuals? What is in their minds that they think that there's no difference between this, that we can't see it, that we can't see the two-tier justice or injustice?
It's a much longer conversation that we just don't have to. It is. So we'll have to come back to that another time.
All right, then. Well, I'll just go through some of the comments here. So it says, Doomscroller Diogenes says, I'm from Northern Ireland. Migrants come here because housing is cheaper than Britain, but they have no idea what they're getting into. We are a fragmented, volatile polity that they will never understand.
Just Logan, sorry for missing you. It says, also, troubles in Ireland again. At this point, just bring back the Empire already. Honestly, the argument for the Empire has never been stronger, frankly. Things were better when Britain was in charge of everything.
The argument for the Empire never went away.
No, I agree. But the evidence of what happens when we're not there, well, I mean, it's not going great, is it?
No. Sigilstone17 says, if you're going to keep quoting Lord of the Rings, I did it once, okay, then you need to start showing the Daily Gondor on the show. Daily Gondor is great.
I love the Daily Gondor. What are you talking about?
I shall bring more in Daily Gondor, yes. All right.
Johan says, Carl, what's your interview with Justin Brearley? Was fantastic, by the way. If you want a moral lecture from the Bible, search Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God on YouTube. I really want it when I'm in the church. If I have to go to a church, I don't want some wishy-washy, floppy, like modern, oh, Jesus just wanted us all to get along. No, I want someone being like, right, you're sinners, and this is why. Sigil Stone also says, Luca, you're a member of the Sanford Police. Handle those gypsies and crusty jugglers for the greater good. Anyway.
Thanks.
That's the greater good.
You got like all the square bits on there. All right, I'm going to crack on with this.
Yep.
Now, we're going to do it one more time because The Death of Man is brilliant. I've been watching it. It's absolutely superb. And I think anybody who's not watched it so far, it needs to get out there straight away, put your hand in pocket and do and see where we're all going. Because there's a link between all our three titles. And actually, there's been a link to the last four or five that we've seen on there. And that comes down to philosophy, the concepts of ourselves as individuals and where we're going in the future. And Carlos particularly put that out in The Death of Man, and I recommend it to you. Going on here, we're going to now talk about reform. I didn't want to talk about reform. We've done a lot of it over the past week or so. I've been told on NX, are you just now a totally anti-Farage, anti-reform man? But they are the gift that keeps on giving at the moment. You know, here is the opportunity of a political party that sucks up the whole right, gives us the opportunity to take out the Uni Party, gives us the chance to think, yes, we finally got change, and people are not only flocking to them as members, helping them on the streets, their voters are coming with them because they're sick and tired. And there is an ideology about it. We're strong on immigration. We are concerned about the rise of Islam in this country. We spending far too much. You know, we want to control, you know, the all of these
all completely reasonable things,
things, and that's what they say. And then they appoint a new chairman, which I said is not really a chairman. I think he's the head of membership. And that is Dr. David Bull, who, you know, I kind of pass him every now and again when I'm going onto the Talk TV thing on a weekend. You know, generally, you know,
he's a lovely chap,
lovely, affable guy. But he's named as the new chairman, and which I think is funny in the first instance, isn't it? When Nigel Farage says, "I'm going to announce a new chairman," and Zia Youssef is going off to look after Doge. But he'll also look after all the fundraising, the job of the chairman. Kind of, he's also going to deal with all the administration, head of the chairman. He's dealing with the policy of the chairman, and he'll be my limb.
Yeah, my right-hand man.
My right-hand man.
Yeah.
Shadow chairman.
Job of the chairman, isn't it? So anyway, David Bull has just announced that all he's going to do is wander around the country just talking to members.
I mean, someone's got to do it, I suppose.
Yeah. That's the new definition of chairman for all political parties, is the head of membership.
I've heard the members aren't happy, so no. Someone needs to.
No, he's hugely excited by this, apparently.
Okay.
And he says, I did realise the only way Kabore was to resign and then come back, he joked. So he's doing another joke about resigning and coming back. So he's announced. But amongst his first interviews, I think this is where we're now beginning to see the real heart of the leadership, or at least the top tier individuals within Reform.
Well, just a quick thing here before we move on. Like, everyone was like, "Oh, who's the new chairman going to be?" It's like, look, there are about three people that Nigel has to choose from at this point.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be like Lee Anderson, Richard Tice, David Bull, or Aaron Banks. Right?
Exactly.
There's like, he's got no one else around him. There's no other talent. There's no one loyal to him. He has carved everyone else off.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we'll just roll a dice. You know, you're going to pick someone. Anyway, sorry.
So yeah, no, or maybe it's the Lebanese millionaire that we'll come to.
Maybe.
You know, that maybe wouldn't have sent off the right pictures. But knowing Nigel, what he's done, he's got Zia, who's the Muslim, and David, who's the gay person.
Mm.
So now we've got the LGBT and Islam, and I'm neither racist
or homophobic. Well done, Nigel. Well, got it. They'll got never it. Accuse you again.
No, they won't.
That addresses all of my concerns.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care about policy.
Stupid.
It just works for the BBC. It works for ITV. It works for Sky. So therefore, everything's good in the world.
Finally, the libs will leave me alone. Yeah. Oh, shut up, Nigel.
I might be able to go to Hawksmoor and have a steak without being kicked out.
Yeah.
That's it. God. Yeah, I'm not those dirty people.
Supine. It's so pathetic.
So here we go. Oh, hang on. Where's the? No, this is the first point. Maybe it's come down there. We've got through what he's supposed to have said. Hours after he's come, I think it's just flipped out. But I'll go back to it then. Is that David Bull then turns around in his first interview, and I'm certain when we were putting this up, Carl, you had it on the video on there, so I don't know if it was one of the other ones we've got it in the...
Oh, is it the Lifeblood of Britain?
I think this is the one it is. I must have gotten the wrong way around here. David Bull turns around and says that immigration is the lifeblood of the country. I mean, I just want to listen to this.
Are there any other items of clothing that you think are a threat to public safety?
So I think that the key for me about this is it's about integrating into this country. Immigration is the lifeblood of this country. It always has been. But also, if you come to this country, you have to adopt our culture, our system.
Sounds like David Cameron.
Yes.
Like, oh, my
far
God.
I tweeted out yesterday in reaction to this, far from being the lifeblood of the country, it's actually put the country on life support.
It's poisoning us.
That is a very good one.
Yeah, it's killing our country.
It is, but even the idea that it's the lifeblood, to me, is like simply saying that the blood of immigrants has been running all the way through the veins of the United Kingdom, of England, Scotland and Wales. You know,
also, we die without them.
And that's it. We die without it. You know, since the days of Alfred and Æthelstan, even before that, before the idea. Yes, no one will argue that as the rocks were moving apart from Europe and coming back again, a few Celts came over from the steppes of the Middle East and crossed over and lived.
Hey, how many thousands of years back?
That's about 12 or 14,000.
Exactly.
Then we join up again, and of course, then we had Celts, and then the Brits, and the Romans came over here, and you know, all
2,000 years ago.
2000, and there was only about 5,000 of them, and they just subjugated us. That's fine to be slaves.
Well, to be fair, if he wants to compare immigration to conquest, then
fine.
But
then what's the argument with the Romans and, of course, the Mexicans losing a war in California?
But we've done genetic testing in Britain. There's just been no significant genetic impact on the British people since the Anglo-Saxon migrations.
Yeah, the big change was around 52 to 55, and even that was relatively small. It was tailing off until Blair decided that the whole country was going to explode with 1.3 million asylum applicants in 1 year, in the year 2000. And so to him to argue that from the years of Æthelstan onwards, you know, someone's got 1066 there in Dan, I'd go a bit further back than you wouldn't mind, to 1945, and I'd go a little bit later, is that, you know, there's no way that one can argue that immigration. We had some good points. Huguenots.
It was mostly emigration.
Yeah, Huguenots over...
like, mostly it's Britons emigrating to the rest of the world.
Yeah, 20,000 Huguenots, they did contribute, you know, significantly.
Yeah, 20,000 Huguenots.
Yeah, but over 50,000 over 20 years or something like that.
20,000 French Protestants.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
So you cannot argue they are the lifeblood of this country. You can argue that they're important at the moment, that they're vital in certain areas, unfortunately, because we've had large-scale immigration. But the argument that they're a lifeblood is wrong, because if they all left or they all stopped, would this country die?
No, we'd be fine.
No.
I think things would get better.
And in that one line, it just shows a total ignorance that is akin to... It shows no understanding of why the Tories are essentially an existential death mode.
Yeah, 100%.
And it also misunderstands the whole point that there is a massive argument and discussion going in this country between people who've come here for several generations, that immigration is a discussion on most tables about it and all across the workplace, not about race or religion. To a certain extent, religion is coming into that on the creed, but it's all about numbers and the implications and impacts on this nation. So to turn around and say it's racist about that is a nonsense. Only those who are extreme would argue that.
It doesn't even matter. Like, that's not the question. I mean, he points out, well, it's about integration. Okay, that ship sailed. The integration ship has sailed. Now in London, we're getting signs up in Urdu or whatever.
There's nothing left to integrate.
Bengali. Yeah, exactly. That it's over. The integration argument is over. But, sorry.
It's okay. But I'm just saying, who is David Bull and what is he representing? And he then goes on to double down on this. You know, having got the opportunity to say it early on, he then doubles down on GB News later on the evening.
We are an island of immigrants.
Oh, shut up.
Right. Baby. Now, I remember that was a Labour MP's Home Secretary under Blair that first argued that we're an island of immigrants. And that is palpably untrue. I mean, it's one of the things I've been working on for a while, potential book that eventually will come out towards the end of the year, that flags not only the genetic code through DNA, but actually the historical numbers coming into this country, the emigration that went on involved in that. So this is palpably untrue. The idea that we're an island of immigrants only started to become conceptually true is when we had large numbers coming in after 55. 52 to 55 was the starting point.
And even then, that was 1-2% of the population.
Absolutely.
So small. Like, it really is until the late 90s where the numbers start ramping up.
But even this here, this whole, oh, you're an island of immigrants, therefore you must have immigration, it doesn't matter, regardless of what the history is. Because also it's like, there's this idea that, well, that's historically who we've been, so it must continue, even though it's not true. And then it becomes, well, you have to have it to atone for the empire.
Yeah.
Okay, does Ireland have to have it? Does Sweden have to have it? It ultimately, it's all nonsense. It's just nonsense. We want this to happen to you, and we will concoct whatever irrational reason we can, you know, muster.
Unless they keep moving from reason to reason, when you're like, that's not true. Yeah. Okay, I've got another one. It's like, no. Why are we having this conversation? Yeah. You know, you just want to take what's ours for someone else. Yes. Not having it. The answer's no.
Yeah, and what this is showing is not only just the discussions of the background of where it all comes from, the philosophical and practical issues about why this is wrong, but it's showing him to be, as you say, in one way, very much a Labour person with the island of immigrants, one way a David Cameronite, you know, with a lifeblood.
Mr. Blairite.
And you're asking yourself, who is this man? I'll whip through a couple of these. 9-year-olds should be taught what it means to be LGBT in school.
So the argument on this is he's posting the headline, so maybe he doesn't endorse this. Maybe he's alerting people,
okay,
right?
Possibly.
But if you scroll down the list, there's a thread here that, you know, like LGBT armed forces ball in Manchester. It's a right. Yeah. So you're, I mean, LGBT is a communist method to try and create a constituency that can attack the majority heterosexual community. Expressly by the people who designed the term LGBT.
Yeah, right. There I am, David Cameron. Yeah. I'm proud to legacy of LGBT rights. Yeah. Now, you know, every one of us we would turn around and say this is perfectly fine to have the same rights as an equal obviously. Individual. I've campaigned, I've done exactly the same sort of things, but the ideology of what it is, particularly with the trans element coming in.
Even then, I'm not even sure if I agree. I'm not even sure if I'm for gay marriage, to be honest.
We can have the argument that they're still human beings, don't have an issue with them for being.
Sure, sure. I'm not suggesting persecution or anything. But there are certain institutions that are important for reasons that are, frankly, not for the people involved in them. Yeah. Right? Like marriage is there for children. It's important for the children. So for to be like, oh well, gay people want to get married, it's like, yeah, but they can't have children. It's not really for them. Yeah. And I'm not saying anything should happen to them or anything like that. But I'm not saying I'm even committed to this. But there's an argument to be had there and discussion to be had about it being not just for you. It's for others.
Yeah, and I'm on the view that obviously with children, I've seen my own children, I don't think much of anything to talk about sex or sexuality should really be taught about them at primary school level. No. I'm perfectly happy to bring in sex education when they're slightly older, particularly as, my daughter, 12, came as shock when the natural bodily functions changed for her. And it's like all of that, you then start to understand they're becoming adults rather than the little people that they are. I don't want indoctrination of children, and yet David seems to be happy to have this level of questioning coming in, and others have pointed out exactly what he is on this. Sex education, we need Twitter silence, all of this. German's chancellor has made a brave, I found that's one fascinating, on refugees. German's chancellor is brave, decisive, and right.
All right, so Merkel bringing in millions of foreigners to be flung on the Germans, that's good. Yeah. I mean, look at this. Inclusive sex ed is important and must be compulsory. I don't agree with that at all. I'm actually getting to the point where I don't really want sex education in schools. That's, I think, the parents' responsibility, frankly. And I don't really trust some lefty teacher to try and pervert my children.
Well, this is the element about trust in there and how we know and whether we should have rights as parents to at least understand what the curriculum is and how far they're going on that.
Look at the just the one below. We need Twitter to silence LGBT hate.
Yes.
All right, so we're just open for censorship now. Homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia have no place online, says a radical leftist. That's what a radical leftist says.
Exactly. So what we have here in Dr. David Bull is someone who's now the chairman of Reform, who's pretty much advocating the opposite of what is true about immigration and cultures in this country. Radical leftist ideology on all the others and supporting Merkel's monumental madness of mass immigration into Germany.
This is crazy.
You now have that, and they turn around to us and say, you're just trying to bring Reform down. You're just criticizing Reform for Reform's sake. No, I'm criticizing the individuals at the charge who are supposed to advocate your policies. And if this is what they believe in, where's the trust?
This is the total destruction of Reform's credibility as a right-wing party. Right, this is not right-wing. This is not conservative. This is not something I could ever vote for.
This is everything that drove us away from the conventional party.
This is why the conservatives are dying, as you pointed out. This is why Labour are awful. This is why the Lib Dems are irrelevant.
If you want to be exactly the same as Labour, Lib Dems, Green, and the Conservatives, do this and join them.
Yeah.
Be that party, but don't be something that the people are crying out for something totally different. Mm. And I would say, okay, let's be rational. This is David. He's just been brought in last minute, He's only, as you say, Carl, one of the few individuals that could possibly be used in that role. Has his own independent mind to be able to undertake the functions of being a membership committee chairman. So is it just him? And then you have this from Nigel. The weakening. How would you define a Welsh person? Someone who's lived there for 5 to 10 years.
Can we listen to this? Because this is actually, he's being very slippery in this.
You say that you would like to give priority to people from Wales for housing. How would you define a Welsh person?
Well, it's a very fair question from your channel. We hadn't proposed the Welsh language test. No, look, it's got to be somebody who's lived and is settled in Wales, has paid taxes and obeyed the law. And if someone's done that for a 5 or 10 year period, then I think they've every right to say that they're fully part of the Welsh community.
So there are a couple of things on this, right? She didn't ask, what does it take to be a part of the Welsh community?
No.
You know, like, your dog will be part of the Welsh community. That doesn't make it Welsh, right? So he's been slippery there. But really what she's saying is, okay, well, what is a Welshman? How do you define them? And Farage's is just, well, if they've lived there 5, 10 years, haven't, you know, they followed the law, so no criminal record, and paid taxes.
Yeah.
So if you're disabled, you don't have a job, you're not Welsh, right? If you committed a crime, if you've, you know, tax fraud or something, you're not Welsh. Or if you leave Wales for a substantive period of time, you're no longer Welsh.
The Welsh can be criminals too.
Yeah, well, but like, if you,
that's right. If you commit a crime, you cease to be Welsh.
But you move to England for 10 years for work or something, you're not Welsh anymore. Yeah. You can't come back. Sorry.
I'm therefore Welsh because I spent 3 years at university in Aberystwyth. Then I lived in Colwyn Bay and Llandudno for 3 years. They weren't joined together. It was 3 years and 3 years.
You're as Welsh as they come.
Therefore, Siarad Cymraeg, dim o smygwr. I am Welsh.
It's nonsense.
Preposterous.
My friend living in Japan for 5 years, who's paid taxes, has not just become Japanese.
You know, like, he's absolutely Japanese.
But suddenly you're going to define that. How would you define an English person? Someone who's lived there for 5 to 10 years.
Exactly.
How would you define someone who's a Scots person? Someone who's lived there for 5 to 10 years.
The Boris wave. Yeah. English.
That's right.
And so this means that basically there are no English expats in Spain, right? No, they're all Spanish now.
That's right.
They're all Spanish.
They're not expats. Yes, that's right.
Exactly. They're not expats. They're Spanish as the day is long. And the answer, of course, is how do you define a Welsh person? Someone with Welsh ancestry is what a Welsh person.
And not even here. He's just said someone who's lived there for 5 to 10 years. If you're an illegal asylum seeker who's lived there for 5 to 10 years and never been caught, if you don't have indefinite leave to remain and a British passport, you are now Welsh as well. This shows the nonsense of policy for Nigel Farage, his lack of intellectual capability being able to understand it, how he thinks he can get away with just bonhomie. We didn't do the Welsh language test, did we? You don't need an English test to be in England either, by the way. You know, that's it. It is showing him for the weaknesses in intellectual capability of running the argument for patriotic political party.
But the problem is, this is Sadiq Khan's definition of what a Londoner is.
Mm. Yes.
Right? Yes.
This is Sadiq Khan's globo homo definition of, you know, open borders, you know, infinite migrants. That's the same that Nigel Farage has adopted here. This is preposterous.
So now on immigration, you're the lifeblood. You only have to be there 5 to 10 years. Yeah. And you're therefore someone who is capable of then, remember, this is about housing policy.
Yeah.
Mm.
So someone comes here in Britain for 5 to 10 years, in any way, shape, or form, you're now that nationality and therefore capable of receiving
housing. It's literally magic soil theory.
Yeah, that's it. But is that alone?
No.
No, this was me. I think...
Well, I mean, this connects quite well with it, really.
Yeah, it connects it.
Like, Nigel Farage, if a million people can live in... Can be brought from... Like, there was a Welsh MP or whatever, whatever they call the constituency... MPs, like, who was like, oh yeah, we should be bringing in millions of Afghan women to save them from the burqa and being Afghani.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, then they would become just as Welsh, even though there are 3 million Welsh and 41 million Afghans. Mm. So, and then this ties nicely into this, doesn't it? When Richard
Tice... absolutely. I mean, this is then going on to the next individual. Yeah. Richard Tice is an MP. They, as we said, could he have been the chairman? He was once the vice chairman under Ben Habib. We're talking about immigration again. So we've now looked at different policies ranged from David Bull. We've now seen the immigration argument of what is a citizen of this country from Nigel Farage in a recent interview. And then we're talking about, are you concerned that there will be a minority British white British? Is that a concern to you? And Richard Tice says, it's a long way off. I'll be long gone. I'll be long gone.
Richard Tyson has 3 kids.
I don't give 2 flying whatevers about what's going to happen to my country. I'll be long gone, but please keep me in as an MP. I just like the idea of being able to flaunt myself with those 2 letters after my name. It can go down in history and on Wikipedia that I was an MP, but I'll be long gone.
And my children won't suffer because they're in the United Arab Emirates. Yeah.
Yes.
That, I mean, everyone around them will be Welsh or English because they'll have been here for 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know what your objection is, you bigot.
Yes. And so what we've got, he doesn't bear any responsibility for his behaviour. And this is going to the issue of trust.
Mm.
Now, Do we trust them when we say that they want to be capable of managing the big issues politically in this country, of which one of those big issues is how do you manage immigration, the large numbers coming into it, the criminality, the cost, the economic issues and the social changes that are happening in a way that preserves the rights of this nation and also ensures that we don't go under? I mean, and the trust issue's there. I'll be long gone.
It
says everything about the man.
The thing is, I trust that that is his honest opinion, frankly.
Yeah.
What are we looking at here? We're not looking at a right-wing party. We're not looking at a party that cares about the British people at all.
Oh, well, I'll whip through a couple because I'm looking at the time and there's far few. But I then said, okay, so we've now looked at, you know, schools, education, sexuality, kind of the family concept, what is a nationality, immigration. Then one of the big issues at the moment is the burqa, and he's now the new chairman, and David, again, straight away out of that. I've replaced Zia Youssef, who said, I didn't really want to ban the burqa, but now I said,
He called it dumb.
He said Sarah. It was dumb. And he said, like, that was dumb. And then he came back and said, I'm phlegmatic about it. It's all right. It'll be fine. But David Bull goes back and says, no, we shouldn't.
So he's got the exact same opinion as Zia Youssef on the burqa.
Zia Youssef on there. Remarkable. No to banning the burqa.
So this is interesting because I don't think, one, the burqa ban wouldn't work. Sure. And it doesn't matter because if the demographics change, they'll just simply re-implement it. But also it's for David's opinion to be, no, we're not banning it. Speaks in contradiction to his own stated opinion of forced assimilation, of integration.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, if you're an integrationist, why aren't you making them look and appear as British as you can?
I completely missed that as well.
Yeah, So again, it goes to that juxtaposition of who he actually is. Mm. As in, is he just saying these lines because that's genuinely what he believes? And that's what I think he is genuinely being who he is. A Cameronite, a Blairite, but nothing to do with a genuine pro-patriotic party.
No, they're an international liberal party. They're a globalist party.
So we've now gone through a number of three or four different policy issues. And of course, Islam now steps into one. Farage suspends a reform candidate for claiming Islam is a false religion. Now,
that is remarkable.
Well, every Christian, as Wolf points out, it has in our religious tenets, by definition, believes Islam is a false religion.
Well, every religion.
Jew believes.
Every religion believes every other religion
is a false religion. So therefore, if you believe in freedom of religion, which is another political issue, another conceptual idea of what conservatism should be about, a modern pro-conservative party, should be about accepting, you know, the Christian concepts, allowing them to be able to believe in what Christianity is without receiving the big hand of your political leader firing you for it.
I mean, the normative characteristics of the British people should allow to a certain affirmative vision of what they are.
But also, if she'd said Buddhism is a false religion, would Farage have kicked her out? Probably not. I don't think he'd have cared.
No.
Right? Which means that Islam has a privileged position in reform, making reform essentially an Islamic party. If you're not allowed to say Islam is a false religion, but you won't get kicked out for saying Christianity is a false religion, then it's an Islamic party.
And I'm just finding this quite bizarre, you know, in that obviously we've got to look at why the left is not picking up on this and the conservatives are not picking up on this, because they all believe it themselves.
Yeah, they all agree with
exactly
it.
The same. And the press are giving Farage an easy ride. But the cultists within Farage are believing it. And he says many Britons are converting to Islam. This is, as he was, the chairman of Reform UK is a Muslim born in Scotland with Sri Lankan origins. Islam is eating up the UK inch by inch. And Farage goes on why Islam is getting stronger on there. I don't know if we've got time to play. I mean, let's try it. Let's go through.
This archbishop is turning people away from religion, certainly from the Church of England, in their droves. Many are just giving up on religion completely.
A lot of people are converting to Islam, aren't they? Have you noticed that as well?
Yes, there is a bit of a trend with that. Islam's a very complicated one because there are clearly sects that are compatible and we would respect equally, because Islam doesn't have a proper head. There are elements of it that are very worrying and very scary.
Wow.
I don't know if a lot of people are converting to Islam, though.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, I don't believe that they are.
Unless you're being forced to imprison, but you know.
Let's
see if anyway. You can survive like Tommy Robinson, otherwise you convert. Yeah. But what I wanted to look at this is there are sects that are okay, and there are sects that are not. Okay. So
for the sake of time, I'm afraid we're going to have to push on.
So, you know, again, I'm pointing out the issues of here, lack of understanding of a bigger issue.
Lack of courage.
Issues of chilling warning over Muslim population. We're politically alienate. We will lose.
Completely convinced that Islam will just crush us and we'll have...
That's right.
We just can't fight back. Okay.
So giving Islam a privileged position over all other religions and those who are atheists and agnostics.
Best we can hope for is a managed, orderly surrender.
That's it. That's really what Churchill said, didn't he, when Hitler was crossing over. Okay. Maybe I'm being a bit sad on this, but I just found this particularly funny. I mean, I thought the beard was particularly well kept, to be honest, looking at it, and it really did blend in with the tie. But, you know, this is what people are beginning to think about Farage. Yeah. They're beginning to see him because he is not saying things that enables people to say, hang on a minute, I thought you were of the patriotic right and you're not recognising some of the big issues.
No, he's not.
And then
he's a liberal.
I come across, I think, is that?
That's the one we're on now.
That's the one there. Sorry, I just clicked that one.
Yeah.
He then talks about economically, I was going to final points about, he talks about the population explosion is leading to the declining living standards. Mm-hmm. So his answer to that is an employer immigration tax. Again, not dealing with the issue.
Yeah.
Let's hit the businesses that he says are struggling to be able to sustain itself. So economically, he is not of the right anymore. We've got this, who banged on about under influence of the World Economic Forum, and yet we do know that Bassem Haidar has got a major influence behind the scenes with Zia Youssef, who brought him in, and they're both members of the World Economic Forum. Nigel talks about the elites in charge, and yet he's bringing them in. And I think I'm just going to finish on this point, all the different policies. Farage on Gaza, you know, wonderful, thriving place with well-paid jobs, casinos, nightlife. It seems like very appealing to me on that. He's an economic and social liberal. I mean, irrespective of the rights of the Gaza, all I see Gaza is a nice place to have a party.
It needs to be developed like real estate.
Yeah, that's right. And so this isn't now politics, according to all the different policies that we've looked at.
Mm.
The people in charge of reform, they've imploded. And I think you're rightly to point out,
yeah, they've just completely lost all their credibility, frankly. It's just mental. Matthew says, would you give up the NHS to resurrect the British Empire? As the British Empire sacrifice of universal healthcare? I personally don't desire the return of empire, but I also don't like the fact that it's an international health service. So what are you going to do? And Glee says, so reforms, new chairman, meet the new boss, somehow more insufferable than the old boss. And the thing he's not even the new boss. Zia Youssef is still going to be hand puppeting everything anyway. So just mad. Anyway, let's go to the video comments. Baron von Warhawk says, Mexico had California for 27 years. America has had it for 175. This is literally just Gibbs. Give me that state for free after you developed and turned it into an economic powerhouse. Yeah, because that's the important thing. California had nothing when the Mexicans had it. And now it's something. They're like, oh, this is our land. I'll piss off. Let's go to the comment.
Good afternoon. I'm here in Branson, Missouri, and as Carl pointed out, we Americans take our military pride somewhat seriously. This is our long-range reconnaissance association meeting that we have every year here in Branson, Missouri. I'll send you more videos.
Please do. I'm interested to see what that's, guys. Let's go to the next one.
A quick relevant history. Before 1940, the mostly agrarian frontier state of Washington did not produce a single ounce of aluminum. In 1943, the newly completed Grand Coulee Dam on the Columbia River, still the largest in North America, provided the state with tons of cheap electricity for industry. Heavy wartime emphasis was placed on building up aluminum refining in the state. By the end of 1943, Washington made up one-third of the United States' total aluminum production. Today, they're mostly all closed. Go figure.
I want to do that exact walk. It looks amazing.
It does look.
I was
going to
say it looks cool, isn't it?
Yeah. I was like, aluminium production. What are you talking about, man? Like, this is what, there's a Bigfoot. No, let's get to the next one.
He looks a bit silvery.
On a scale from 1 to 10, my friend, you're.
lack of other words, I'd say you're...
Oh, I'd be for Hackney, Diane Abbott there.
Oh, God, my degree from Cambridge, Oxford.
Oh, my God.
I'll open a gate.
This is just decline, man. Absolute decline. Sophie says, I just remember the plot from The Mask of Zorro with Antonio Banderas, taking place in Los Angeles during Mexican rule, where the Mexico rulers are oppressive and bleed the people dry via taxes, also uses slavery to dig out gold, and the whole resolution of the movie is they achieve freedom by freeing themselves from Mexico and becoming American. What Hollywood used to think. And then Los Angeles became 50% Mexican, and now things are different. Someone online says, I say we split the state into California and Jefferson and then wall off California and kick them out of the union. No. I'm sick of this retreat. Right? Denaturalize every Mexican in California and then deport. You know, detain, denaturalize, deport.
Advance, no quarter.
Exactly. Stop giving things up. You've got to start taking things. Start taking some Mexican towns on the border. Screw those people. Jimbo says, do any of these full-time Mexican rioters have jobs to go to? They, like you were pointing out, they're hardly Mexico's finest, right?
No.
You know, like, just remarkably fat. Arizona Desert Rat says, if the name of the city is Spanish, it was colonized. Great point, actually. Exactly correct. And this is... I'm so frustrated by this. When they're like, oh, we Mexicans were here first. Like, no, you fucking weren't. Okay, you were colonists just like the rest of us, so shut up. Charlie says, it should be noted that the Irish government is currently beyond repair. Our current house, I can never pronounce this, so Prime Minister, said that in Parliament on the 11th of May 2017, Ireland wants nothing to do with a backward-looking idea of sovereignty. Oh, what does sovereignty mean?
What, that thing you fought for 1,000 years?
Yes. Very backwards.
Yeah. So we've got it after all that time, and now we don't want it.
Given in.
Typical.
Given in. Be like, nah, the English deserve to rule Ireland, clearly, says the current Prime Minister. It was Leo Varadkar. Charlie says, Stephen, the PSNI have always dealt with trouble in Northern Ireland with a heavy hand. I've no doubt that they have.
No, I'm not saying they haven't on there, but it just is over heavy-handed if you're looking at it on a kind of rational way.
Well, they should be interfacing with the community.
Absolutely.
They should be sat down and go, okay, what's the problem? What can we do? What do you think? You know, here's a suggestion. But they haven't done that at all. Sorry, am I missing some here? Yeah, no. Based Ape says, I haven't seen the Irish this angry since you guys hid all their potatoes. Look, man, right? I looked into the Irish potato famine, right? You know what the problem was? It was the Whigs. So at the time, when it began, there was a Conservative government. And they were like, okay, we'll just import a load of food. And then the Whigs took over. And the Whigs were like, the free market will save this.
Yeah.
And so they stopped the importation of the food. And so obviously people started starving in their millions. And everyone's like, what are you doing? And the Whigs were like, listen, man, the market's going to fix this. It's like, are you mad? You know, like the Conservatives at the time were just like, you know, we'll just bring in food. There's a problem. We can fix it.
When you said Whigs, I thought David Bull and Reform were getting in again.
Well, yeah. It's just, honestly, I just, everything the Liberals have ever done, apart from the abolition of slavery, has been bad.
And everything the Tories have ever done has also been bad.
Well, no, I mean, like the Conservatives wanted to bring food in because obviously there's a famine. So that was a sensible policy.
Yeah.
You know, the Conservatives, their problem isn't necessarily being bad. It's being profoundly weak to the Whigs, to the Liberals, and not rejecting them. But anyway, Russian says, Reform/Farage have just used up the political will of the boomers. They will vote Reform no matter what now. He can just back down now to carry on being the media limelight without pushback. The damage is done. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the total destruction of Reform's own credibility.
Mm.
Where it's like, no, we are not for the British people. We are for the international liberal order. That's what they're saying. And so, okay, well, that's not what I'm for. You know, I'm totally against that, in fact. James says, the question, why are we debating this, is an extremely important one. Homath put it very well the other day. You vote and debate about things like economics policy, tax rises, and local planning matters. You do not vote and debate on things like sterilizing children, ethnic replacement, or cancelling freedom of speech. Exactly true. That's exactly true. The fact that we are permitting the discussion is allowing them to drive the dialectic in the way that they want.
Absolutely.
No, sorry, we're not. That's not up for debate, actually. Dirty Belt says, I've said this before and I will say it again, Reform are simply neo-Tories. Unless there is some colossal shake-up, then expect nothing based from them. One must either discard liberalism and become a nativist or become atomized and undone by it. This is true.
And anyone who were in Reform who wasn't a neo-Tory didn't get past the selection stage or was soundly ejected.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I totally agreed. In fact, Chance here points out, Reform isn't it. You know, go for something else, whatever Rupert Lowe does or whoever else.
Yeah.
Like, Rupert Lowe just came out in direct contradiction and was like, no, the British people are the lifeblood of Britain, which, again, not a controversial statement, something that shouldn't really need to be said. Mm. And yet this was a very important statement for right-wing politics in this country for some reason, because unbelievable. Mr. Flibble says, we have to stick behind Reform because it's the only chance we'll get to hurt the Uniparty, which has caused so much harm. First time in my lifetime that this looked possible. Right. I understand the motive for this. The problem is, they have all declared themselves to be a part of the Uniparty.
If it walks like the Uniparty and talks like the Uniparty, it's no better.
Yeah. That's right. Farage, Tice, Youssef, and Bull are all globalist libs. Mm. That's just all they are. They're part of the Uniparty, man. Like, I wanted Farage to be pretending that, you know, oh yeah, I'm kind of a centrist guy, but actually hardcore to the right. I was kind of hoping he was hiding his power level, right? He wasn't. He genuinely believes this. This is what he is. He's a part of the establishment.
Yeah, and I think I'm the same. I kept quiet for such a long time about this and my own views in the hope that, you know, that can pretend that he would build it with people around him. And once he started getting rid of Rupert and others before him, then you realize that we were ending up where we are now, which is exactly the same sort of people that the people are going to be let down upon when they get in power and nothing changes.
Well, as I understand it, Rupert Lowe and Ben Habib are going to do something, and whatever it is got to be better than the alternatives. And just to finish, Sam says, Carl, I saw the Death of Man documentary yesterday. I think you should do more. Please keep up all the good work you and the gents do at Low Seas. Well, thank you very much. There's a lot of work, a lot of reading, a lot of research, and a lot of work recording it as well, because as you'll notice, I was out everywhere. But it was very fun to do, and we did it ages ago. I'm glad it's finally been published. But we will indeed have more on the way. That clock's different to that clock, so I'm going to go by this clock. Hector says, so Carl, I've learned that I can become Welsh in just 5 years and Nigel will have my back. Hello, neighbour. I'm not Welsh. Well, I'm half Welsh. I don't live in Wales. I'm in Wiltshire.
If Farage had said, well, to be Welsh, you have to own at least 2 sheep. That'd be more reasonable.
That makes most Welsh people not actually Welsh, right? Yeah. They're getting on someone else's sheep.
My cousin's coming for you now, that's it.
But this is a good one, right? What we see in Reform is the corrupting nature of the one ring called liberalism. We begged Farage to cast it into the fires and he whispered back, no.
Yeah.
And it's true. Mm. You know, Nigel, all you have to do is situate yourself inside the paradigm of the British people and say no. Mm. This is for us, you know, we're not hateful, but Farage just could not bear to be called a racist. No. It's in his soul. He was really, like, deeply moved when they called me a name. Oh, God, I don't have their approval. No, of course you don't. What did you think you were going to do? And so, it's just, I'm so, so done with Reform. I'm so, like, whatever comes next, it just has to be radical at this point. Sigilstone says, maybe we need to surprise Farage on the street with impromptu group prayer and see if he instinctively runs towards Mecca. It's so pathetic as well. This pathetic attitude of, oh, we have to bend the knee to Islam. It's like, no, we don't. Like, Americans have a totally disproportionate view of how many Muslims are in Britain. Mm. Right, something like 6.5 to 7% of the country. Really. Americans think it's like 20 or 30%. You know, because of the complete weakness that we demonstrate in the face of this foreign religion. It's just pathetic. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, folks. Go and watch The Death of Man. Like I said, I worked really hard on it, so I want you to enjoy it. And leave comments on there as well, because I'm obviously checking the comments, because I want to know what you think about it. And in the meantime, we will be back tomorrow.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.